It's time for the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network. Live from the Ferg Sports Bar and Grill Studios, across from Tropicana Field in downtown St. Petersburg, Florida. Providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps and the pros across Tampa Bay and the USA. Get your head in the game with the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and your hosts, Mike Rickard and Ben Botham.
Back to the St. Pete Sports Connection on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network. Hour number two, as we sit across from Rays Fan Fest. We must have seen 18,000 people in line. It's a free event, and how long does it run today? Till 2 o'clock?
No, I believe it's till 4 o'clock.
Till 4 o'clock. Like, beautiful.
So that way we got plenty of time for the three of us to actually make it on over there and have a good time.
Well, I've got a brief break in between a soccer event here at 4 o'clock in the same spot. I'll talk a little bit about that later on. I've got Michael Lords with me, of course, author of Curveball at the Crossroads, author and baseball writer, and best baseball, Ben Botham. Very proud of Ben now, as he's given back to his Seminole Warhawks as an assistant coach. Now, are you a utility coach, basically, every position?
Pretty much. I kind of help out wherever they need me. During the games, most of the time, I'm running Game Changer and keeping a book on the other teams. But we just completed the Nate Richardson Memorial Tournament, preseason tournament.
That's Bradley's brother.
Yes, that's of course, for the memory of his brother.
Our own high school expert and play-by-play, Brad Richardson.
And so we won both of our games for the tournament. And this coming week, we start the Steve Georgiadis Memorial Tournament. It's the longest consecutively running opening tournament in the state of Florida for high school sports.
Let's take care of a little business. Of course, we've got a new sponsor coming on board, and that is El Cap. The El Cap restaurant. You ever been to El Cap?
No, but I'm looking forward to try it out.
El Cap is it's iconic 4th Street hamburger joint. That's what they call it. It's been there for about 40 years. It's part of our growing family of locally owned eateries. And 3500 4th Street, the original sports neighborhood bar. In fact, Mark Ferguson, when he was making the decision as a high school coach, middle school coach and teacher, he went down to El Cap and asked the owners, give him some tips. And here, this is an offshoot 30-some years later. So I'm looking forward to them coming on. And each and every day, you can hear a two-minute sports update at 8 o'clock. I'm sorry, 7 and 8 and at noon at drive time. And it plays on the entire Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, the affiliates, 106.1 FM, AM 1340, Clearwater, Tampa St. Pete, 102.3 FM, AM 1350, Dade City, 104.2 FM, AM 1400, Zephyr Hills, and now it's up in Lake City up by Gainesville. And the stream, sportsstream.com, your Sports Connection streaming radio and podcast channel, covering sports from the peewees to the preps to the pros. We launch, actually, a test today, and by the end of the month, we'll have our podcast up. I'm going to talk Michael Lortz into doing his own podcast a couple times a month. And very excited about that project. We'll be doing play-by-play high school games, D2 colleges, things that there's holes in the marketplace. And we'll be doing that on the stream, as well as right now 16 commitments for content from guys like Rock Riley, J.P. Peterson, people who have been in the marketplace taking their podcast and have a landing spot called the stream, and looking forward to that launch. It's been about a year in the workings, and looking forward to that. We've got Rick Vaughn coming on in a few minutes. He's actually watching his grandchildren in Orlando. He's not across the street. So you're going to make it across the street, Michael Lortz and Ben Botham, and Fan Fest, first time in 3 years, the real deal, and obviously people are excited about it, and I love Fan Fest. We did them when I used to work in the Cubs organization, and they're just the celebration, the anticipation, the hope that still exists that your team can, have a successful season. That's what it's all about.
It's also a really good time to, get autographs and, meet some former players who are walking around, and anything else MLB usually puts out there. Like I know the Society of American Baseball Research sometimes shows up at some of these. Some of the other baseball type charities that, get authorization from the Rays to show up, or, Fan Fest here is awesome because you get to go out on the field, you get to walk around the Tropicana Field.
Kids can run the bases.
Kids can run the bases. There's sometimes there's like a pitch speed things.
Yeah, they'll have the radar gun out. Radar gun, guys can throw.
And just a lot of stuff to get fans like into the baseball, you know, into that baseball mentality right off the bat.
Yeah, and it's great. And I love the garage sale thing that they do where they take kind of leftover
items. That cracks me up.
And it's just, it's awesome. It's great. You get really cool merchandise for a bargain of a price. And it's a great way to really bring the fans out. And there's nothing not to
that's
be
right up your alley.
Hey, I love
baseball garage sale.
All for it.
Well, man. Both of you guys, it's right up your guys' alley. Where'd you go? I went to a garage sale. Where at? The Trop.
Yep. Yeah. Some people consider the Trop to be nothing more than a big garage, so it fits, right?
Hey, we talked about that a couple weeks ago. It actually has served its purpose.
Sure.
You know, as we celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Rays this year. Should be a great season. They're getting creative. Obviously, we've talked about, he and I, the $10 tickets. I know you and I used to talk about it. And, of course, the 7-Eleven Friday nights. Yep. That was a great plan as well.
Oh, I love that. I love to go up to 7-Eleven, get a bottle of water and a ticket to the ball game. You know, see, the bottle of water's for the drive there and the drive back. Keep it in the car.
Just a bottle of water?
Just a bottle of water.
All right.
To hydrate, of course. And then, you know, you
what about a refreshing body armor?
Oh, refreshing body armor.
Superior hydration.
Well, I hate to tell you guys, but back in the day, the old man would have refreshing Coors Light for the drive.
You know, we don't drink and drive.
I know. I said the old man back in the day. But
especially, you know, I'll tell you what, I live over in the Tampa side, and going across that Gandy Bridge, especially at night, you got some of the you actually got police sitting on the ends of the bridges to stop some of the racers racing across the bridges.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It gets kind of nuts, but I know that's a subject for another day, but there's no way I'm driving past police stops. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm making sure I've got some water, maybe some bubble gum, whatever in the car.
Well, yeah, bubblegum. All right. As we think.
If not, I am Ubering, lifting, and other rideshare type things.
All right. While we effort, Rick Vaughn, let's talk about rule changes. And we'll start with you, Ben, mm-hmm. and throw them out. And Michael, give your response. And you think they'll be successful. We've been trying to find anything successful that Manfred did during his reign. And it expires in 2024. And we really haven't had any success. But this is one of them that I think is ludicrous.
Yeah, he basically his whole career has been an effort to try and speed up the game. If you look at his Wikipedia article or anything written about Manfred, when they write the book on him, it'll be he tried to speed up the game. Not that he grew the game, not that he made the game better, but that he tried everything he could to speed it up, and I don't think it's going to be successful. So what he has done, he's instituted three major rule changes, the first of which is the pitch timer. And so the length of the game will still be determined by innings, but not minutes. You're going to have 30-second timer between batters and then a shorter time limit between pitches. Pitchers will be required to begin their motion 15 seconds after receiving the ball with the bases empty or 20 seconds after receiving the ball with men on base.
Well, we'll get his perspective. He's kind enough to join us now from Orlando, taking care of a little grandpa, papa, dude. No, they're not duties. It's joy. And he's Rick Vaughn. He's the author of the 100 Years of Baseball on St. Petersburg Waterfront, How the Game Helped Shape a City, former PR director, of course, of the Tampa Bay Rays, where Fan Fest is taking place today. And now he's with the Joe Madden Foundation. How are you, my man?
I'm doing great. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. I tell you what, you would have been amused today, being the man with the plan back in the day. We're on the back patio, Fergs, and we can see the Trop. Obviously, you know where we're at, and there was a line the entire length, Rick, of the parking lot to the east, the entire length, to get in today, and. I didn't realize that a free fan fest would be that attractive, but it's a good sign for the year to start in 2023.
That's a really good sign. Yeah, very good sign. I was always happy to see that. I did probably the first 20 fan fests over there, and we always, I mean, we didn't like to have people waiting in line, but we did like to really see the interest that it generates. And you know, it's a free event. It's a great thing to take the family too, and there's always a lot to do, and it's a great day for the Rays and for baseball.
Well, I guess, and I'm a positive guy about everything that's going on over there. I would think that with this kind of response, maybe we'll see more interest in the actual butts in the seats in 2023, especially with the offer of 1,000 or more $10 seats. And I know that you guys tried all kinds of promotions. What did you find to be the most successful as far as assisting with the numbers from an attendance perspective?
Well, I mean, it was a challenge for every year I was there. You know, we did. We tried just about everything. You know, I think $10 tickets, is, especially nowadays, is a great start. I think that's where people, you know, I think one of the things that we always, I think they still do and we upheld, was we allowed people to bring food in the ballpark. And I think that was something that kind of helped us some. But I don't know, you know, I banged my head against the wall over there for 20 years, and it's hard. It's hard to find what it is that moves the needle. You know, I think they've done a great job with the inside of the ballpark. They do a lot of kid stuff. I've got a friend of mine who has a company that caters to kids' activities. She's over there all the time with stuff for the kids to do when they come to the park. So I don't know the answer. I don't know that anybody really does. It's good to see it. I mean, we always had good crowds at FanFest because we were able to keep it a free event. I mean, we would always get, you know, 15, 20,000 people in there through the course of the FanFest. So it's a good sign. You know, it certainly is a lot better if there wasn't anybody over there.
Now, we had an earlier conversation with Toby Hall, and who's over there signing right now. And I said to Toby, I said, you know, and I'm certain you feel this way, with it being the 25th anniversary, you know, you've got a lot of tears in years over there. And so this 25th, probably be a little emotional for you when they have that celebration, and of course announcing some of the great Rays that helped this first quarter of a century of success and the hard work it took to get where you're at.
Yeah, you know, it did. It was, you know, we started, we had an owner who had never owned a team before, a general manager who had never been a general manager, a manager who had never managed. So we were really, there was a lot. I was one of the few people there that had some baseball experiences. I had been with the Orioles for 10 years. And it was, when you look back on it, you think, you know, that very first day, we didn't have a player. We didn't have a field that was anywhere ready. You know, our first fan fest, actually, we called it Closing the Dome Fan Fest. And that was back in 96 when we had to close the dome to do the improvements on it that needed to be done for it to be ready for Major League Baseball. So many things had to be done. And, you know, I was just thinking the other day, it was that the expansion draft in the fall of 1997, when we started actually adding players. And that's when it really started to feel real. You know, we drafted players out in Arizona. We brought a big contingent out there of our sponsors. And it was really kind of a celebratory thing, because this was the first time that we had somebody that we could say, hey, Tony Saunders is a Devil Ray, you know. It was just, that was a really cool moment. And I haven't really taken the time to think back on all the stuff that we went through, the good and the bad. And there's some really, you know, some pretty cool things that stand out early on that totally get lost, because, you know, we weren't very good those first 10 years. We finished last 9 times. But there were some pretty cool events. I'll never forget, we opened the season in 04 in Japan, and we played the Yankees in the first regular season game of, you know, for Major League Baseball that year. So we had a whole lot of people watching, and lo and behold, if we didn't beat the Yankees, the first, you know, the defending world champions on the first game of the season over there. And that was a really special moment for us, because it was one of the few times early on that we were actually in the national spotlight. And so I've been thinking back on those moments that kind of gotten lost, I think, from the Devil Rays days. But I'm really excited about it. You know, it's a really, I think they've got some really cool things planned. I saw they're going to have a Hall of Fame, which is really good. I think it's time for that. And I'm real excited to see what's going to come down this year.
We're talking to Rick Vaughn. Of course, he's the former PR director, 20 years, and he's been with the Orioles organization for 10. And in his retirement, semi-retirement, he had the time to write the 100 Years of Baseball on St. Petersburg Waterfront, how the game helped shape a city, and then his friend Joe Madden convinced you to help out with the Joe Madden Foundation. So you're not getting a whole lot of time to do some grandparenting, my man. You're keeping pretty dang busy.
Yeah, it's been good. I need to probably stay busy, and my grandson keeps me. He runs around pretty good now. He's four, and then we're just waiting any minute now for our second one. So we're and Joe's been great. You know, Joe has been such a positive influence in my life from the very first time when he took over the Rays in 2006. Such a positive thinker. You know, he was. You know, there's a lot of people that want to get credit for turning the Rays around. And I would say that I had a front row to it. And to me, it was absolutely Joe Madden. We would come into his office many days and people were down. We'd been losing. And he would look at everybody. And by the time you left his office, you felt good. You know, you went in feeling bad. You left feeling good. And he would say things like, look, we're going to turn this place, the Trop is going to be the pit. Nobody's going to want to play us here. And we would all be like, sure, Joe, sure. You know, we've just lost 100 games for the fourth time in our franchise history, but if you say so. And it came true. You know, he got people to believe, and that's a sign of a real leadership. And what happens in that clubhouse is so important. It's a razor-thin line when you're looking at major league talent. The difference is so small, and being able to find those things that get players to play and to believe in something and to feel good about themselves and their teammates. Joe was able to do that, and he just did it by being so positive and allowing them to have the freedom to be themselves. Didn't try to make them anything they weren't. The last thing he wanted was somebody in the clubhouse trying to be something they weren't, you know, and I think it really had as much to do with our turnaround more than anything else.
And I think that culture still permeates today with Kevin Cash. I think you'd have to agree with that from a positive perspective, believing, you know, even though they're in the division with the, you know, the Blue Jays now, their young talent, and of course, the always deep pockets of the Yankees and the Red Sox. But I think that there's a real attitude when they go to spring ball that, you know, we're in this again this year.
Yeah, I think I think they can pitch pretty well too. But
look at that rotation this year. Oh my word!
Yeah, they're not gonna give up a lot of runs. But I think Kevin's been able to maintain that. You know, I really do. But it's that first culture change that gets you to believe that you can win and that the Tampa Bay Rays are not a doormat, that we're going to be something special. That's that initial thing, and I think Kevin has been able to keep that rolling. You know, it's a positive atmosphere. Kevin's a positive guy as well, you know, and he clearly gets the most out of his players every single time out there. So yeah, he's done a terrific job. He's a good friend, and I really admire him so much, and I respect the job that he's done there.
Hey, let's take a trip back in time to, you're talking about culture in the locker rooms and when you guys were getting your start and picking up some veterans. And I was just talking to Ben here and Michael about, you know, when you had Fred McGriff and Jose Canseco, Wade Boggs, you had some real star power and that was absolutely putting, you know, butts in the seats. But that's got to be difficult when you've got, you know, three guys, their careers winding down and, you know, their strong personalities. Talk a little bit about that period. And what years were those? I was trying to remember.
Yeah,
I came
that
down
was
to Iowa and went to a spring game down at L.A. and they were all on the club at that time.
Yeah, 99 was, I think, the hit show. And that was, we had, who was it? We had McGriff, Canseco, Vinny Castilla, and Greg Vaughn. So we had
that
four.
That was it. The guy I mentioned was Greg Vaughn, yeah.
Yeah, there was four guys that could hit 30 bombs. And, you know, I remember when the season was over and we had a disappointing season, I want to say it was something like 40 games that all four of those guys were in the lineup at the same time because they all got hurt. Every one of those guys got hurt at some point. I think McGriff played the most games, but all the other three guys were banged up You know, Canseco, I think, ended up having his back surgery that year. But it never really happened. You know, we never had those four guys, you know, hitting 3, 4, 5, and 6 or 2 through 5 or whatever it was in the lineup. So we kind of pushed that out there, hit show, and it just never happened. It never really happened. And plus the fact we had a hard time getting people out. So we might have scored a few runs, but we were giving up probably more. So it was just one of those things that you got to keep everybody healthy. You got to realize that, you know, you're signed guys that have a chance to stay healthy. And unfortunately, it just that whole thing kind of fell apart.
All right. Now I'll ask you, and then we'll talk about the book. The announcement that the Rays Hines project and redevelopment was going to be the direction, it looks like, if Manfred would quit making comments that he shouldn't be making, it looks like that will take place. What was your opinion of that decision?
Well, I think that was the right decision for sure. You know, I think I think that was the best way to keep the ball club there in St. Pete. And I think Hines is like a world-renowned developer. They know what they're doing. You know, they're not new to any situation. This is something they'd be very comfortable with. The Rays have a great eye on the community, especially the African-American community, which is so important in meeting the needs of the mayor and the community there. And they know how to, and they know what they want in a ballpark. So I think it was really, personally, I think it was the only choice to make, and I'm just glad that he made it.
All right. Well, the book, we talked about it. You were down here. We're gonna have a signing for 100 years of baseball on St. Petersburg's waterfront. How the game helped shape a city. I've enjoyed my read there because I like history, and being from Iowa, I really wasn't that in tune with what's going on down here in St. Pete. And you've collaborated with a lot of people to extract content that. Especially for the sports fan or just a fan of St. Petersburg history, you did a wonderful job, man.
Well, thank you very much. It was so much fun to do and to try to, the way the city was so intertwined with baseball in the 20s all the way really up through the 80s when and a lot of that had to do with the fact that we had the Yankees and the Mets here for most of those years. And so we had a big media market here all the time. I mean, it went from this little sleepy village in the 20s of about 4,000 people, and there was a huge explosion that was kind of happening anyway in terms of home ownership and things of that nature in the early 20s. And then you throw the Yankees in there, and it just really kind of exploded. And I do think it certainly wasn't everything to the city, but it was important. Baseball was important to the city. And there were, other things. Obviously, it was a beautiful place to come, whether you like baseball or not, But I think Al Lang, who was two-time mayor early on, he realized that one way to really take that tourism message was to put it on the back of baseball. When you had all this free advertising from sports writers coming down here, he made sure they had a great time. He made sure they wrote great things about what they were seeing down here. And then it became when writers were coming down to spring training to cover all of the teams down this way, they made sure that a lot of them stayed right in St. Pete. It was right, it was in the middle of everything. It was where you wanted to be. And then if you wanted to go down to Bradenton or Sarasota for the day to cover those, to write stories about them. But everybody invariably pretty much anchored here in St. Petersburg. And I think that, I think the amount of publicity that it generated was just incalculable. There was so much. I really enjoyed reading about the fact that after a while, the sports editors up in the north and northeast, they didn't even mention, when they wrote their datelines out, it just said St. Petersburg. It didn't even say Florida at the end because everybody knew where St. Petersburg was, like it was a New York or a Boston or Chicago, and now all of a sudden there's just St. Petersburg without the designation of what state it was in because it became that popular. And just coming up with that stuff, I had so much fun. doing it. And I've kind of gotten up on my soapbox about it. I do think the city, and I've written the mayor about this, I do think the city should do a better job of memorializing the history that went on down there, that, you know, whether it was Waterfront Park or Al Lang Field or Al Lang Stadium. You know, there were three ballparks on that site from 1922 until today. Obviously, it's not a baseball field anymore, but there was an awful lot of history went on there. And the reason is because, really, for more than any other city, is because we had two teams training there. And for many years, they were great teams. It was the Yankees. It was the Cardinals. Then it was the Mets and the Cardinals. So we didn't have just one team training there. We had two. And in many of those years, it was an American League team and a National League team. We saw so many teams come through there and so many great players come through there. And it'll never obviously be repeated to that magnitude again. And to me, it was just such an important part of shaping the city. And it was a pleasure for me to write about it.
You know, when you walk out in front of Ferg's, where we usually set up, there's a home plate in I believe it's in bronze, about the Cardinals' participation and involvement in the community. Yes. And as we lost Tim McCarver in the last day or so, I think about all the other people I run into that grew up in St. Pete that are Cardinal fans. It happens to me all the time. I'm like, why the hell are you a Cardinals fan? And then it dawns on me. Even Joe Boudreau, my friend and the guy that owns RadioSt.Pete.com, he talks about all this interaction he had, you know, back in the day with Bob Gibson and Ozzie Smith and all these greats and those World Series teams that the Cardinals had. That it just blew me away when I first got down here. And I was thinking about McCarver today, and I'm sure he was down here. And a lot of greats have come through St. Petersburg, and now they're in Busch Stadium in Missouri.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of pockets of Cardinals fans down here. When the Cardinals, on the few times the Cardinals have played at the Trop, they draw well, and it's because of those people. Tim McCarver was a friend of mine, and I saw Tim at the Hall of Fame just July, at the induction ceremony in July. He was up there, and he was struggling then, and he knew he was, and it was, you know, he still had a pretty good mind. He still recognized me and remembered me, and we got to talk, and I helped him get around a little bit, and he loved it here. He loved St. Pete. What a great guy he was. He was a really good ball player. He was a really good announcer. He carried himself with so. He was one of those people that you could feel the respect, you know, you could feel the command for respect coming off of him from his body language, and not in a bad way, in a good way. You know, you were happy that he was a baseball ambassador because he was such a classy guy.
Well, what I liked about him was how candid he was about respecting the game, and he wasn't shy about it when he saw young players that may not have had the level of respect he felt that they should exude, and he was very, very upfront like that.
Yeah, he was a leader. I mean, he talked to, you know, he had to have some hard conversations with people like Bob Gibson, who was another leader, who was another guy that was kind of, he was fearless, and, you know, for sure. But he had conversations with those people that had to be, you know, people like that, of that ilk, that had to be made, you know, to make the team better. And as it turned out, I mean, he and Gibson were terrific, you know, just a terrific duo and a great set of friends and teammates. And those things don't happen without, you know, people like Tim McCarver willing to have difficult conversations, willing to, you know, to talk things out, and he was that kind of guy. And you're right, his comments about the game, you know, when he was a broadcaster, were always were candid and refreshing.
Exactly. I had several afternoons, I guess, with Bob Gibson at FanFest, and I know he probably very sad. I think he's still in Omaha, Nebraska, at the passing of Tim McCarver. All right, let's last thing. We're going to have your book signing. Is that May 11th?
I think it's May the 6th when the Yankees are there on a Saturday.
It's May the 6th.
Maybe check my day. I may be wrong. I thought it was May 6th, but I believe that's when the Yankees are here on a Saturday.
Yeah, it is for fact. So we'll have you on that day. It'll be a lot of fun.
You'll do
book signing, and we'll talk baseball all day. All right.
Yeah, thanks. If you want to get the book, you can go to Amazon.com and order your book. So thank you, guys. Thank you for having me on, and thanks for giving me an opportunity to talk about the book.
Thanks very much. He's Rick Vaughn, former PR director for the Tampa Bay Rays. Perfect, fellas.
On a
Fan Fest Saturday, we come back, and we'll talk baseball till we wind things down here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network.
Time's over. Reset the clock.
We're going to shut them down.
Dial the down.
Do it!
And get your head in the game.
Visualize an attack. Yes. Visualize an attack.
Yes. The Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. Live from the Clubhouse Studios inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
I take a scotch and water. Hold the scotch.
On the Tampa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Ferg Sports Bar and Grill at the corner of 13th and Central, across from the Trop in downtown St. Pete, serving Champa Bay for over 29 years, is your iconic headquarters to catch your favorite teams in action with over 95 televisions, 35,000 square feet to serve private parties, game watching events, concerts, and of course all the Rays, Bucks, and Lightning action, along with your favorite collegiate teams. Join the party every game at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Visit RadioSt.Pete.com for a great variety of local audio programs, live coverage of local events, award-winning syndicated radio programs, over 800 Tampa Bay musicians, and of course, local sports coverage. Download the free Radio St. Pete apps or find RadioSt.Pete.com on your enabled speakers. RadioSt.Pete.com is where local music lives.
What does Sea Dog Brewing and Shipyard Tampa Bay Tailgate have in common? Both are world-class experiences, owned by the same people. What a great place to spend some time with friends this holiday season? The place to be is Sea Dog Treasure Island, 9610 Gulf Boulevard. Why Sea Dog, you ask? Well, it's locally owned with locally produced brew right here in Florida. It's also a place for fun, food, and drink on the coastal Blind Pass waterfront. Ice pick draft drinks, Sea Dog Blue Paw, and a Mug Club rewards program. Get all this to go with a family-owned breakfast experience with homemade biscuits and more. Open 8 a.m. to late night. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com. While there, enter to win Tampa Bay tailgate tickets near Ray J for Bucks home games. Sea Dog Brewing, Treasure Island. It's where Tampa Bay family and friends go to enjoy life from breakfast to late night. 9610 Gulf Boulevard, Shipyard, Sea Dog Brewing. Check it out at treasure.seadogbrewing.com.
Pulling out all the stops of the fourth.
All right, let's go.
Time to bring it home with the dub.
Yeah. Let's get rocking.
Stick to the game plan with a Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection live from the Clubhouse Studios inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill.
Let's rock this joint.
On the Champa Bay Sports Connection Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on this Rays Fan Fest Saturday. Looks like everybody has got in. We'll get an update from our parking lot reporter Ben Botham here in a minute. Ben Botham, of course, baseball Ben Botham, Seminole baseball assistant, and Michael Lortz, baseball author and writer, and both of them historians. And that was a nice conversation with Rick Vaughn. He's got a plethora of information. You should. He was in the bigs for 30 years as a PR director. Some great stories.
Yeah, looking forward to that. May 6th, you said, is his book signing?
May 6th, it's Saturday, yep.
Yeah, well, I'll definitely be here. I definitely want to pick his brain on some stuff.
We'll be set up front. We're going to be set up out front because it's going to be Yankees, too.
Oh, boy.
You know how crazy it is during Yankee games down here?
No, it's nuts. I set up my book signings.
Yeah, you did.
I've done some really good ones. I was actually downstairs before I came up here to talk to you and sold a couple of books and hope to be down there for the rest of FanFest.
You're going over.
I'm probably not going to go over because I've got my box of books, so I'll be outside of Ferg's.
That's a dedicated man, an author.
I'm trying to hustle, man.
The name of the book again?
Curveball at the Crossroads, runner-up book of the year here in Tampa Bay in 2021.
Beautiful, brother. Yeah, and you are going over.
I will definitely be over there. Got to get some 25th anniversary merchandise, maybe a hat or two.
Hey, how cool was that when Rick Vaughn mentioned 2004 and Yankees and Rays in Japan?
Yeah,
and you've got the commemorative brim on.
I do certainly have it on. I got it at their garage sale here at FanFest, and that was very cool little pickup there.
And this conversation, of course, with Rick Vaughn was brought to you by our good friends at Body Armor and Coca-Cola Beverages of Florida, also a proud supporter of everything we do in the high school world, and we've got a lot going on. We're launching the stream today at 4 o'clock. It will be a high school soccer event up here for an hour, and my right-hand man, you've met Buster DeLay, I think, the Wiz. Mm-hmm. Well, Buster was going to be here today to help me with soccer. I'm glad Oscar showed up because I just got a text from my savant, soccer savant. He got a concussion playing high school JV soccer this morning. Oh, he can't make it. I'm going to be stumbling, fumbling, and bumbling. I've got the president of the Rowdies. I've got all these soccer guys. I'm grabbing one and sitting them right next to me and opening the mic and go, talk. Because I cannot carry on an hour's worth of conversation on the world of soccer. I can assure you that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Mike. Well, I don't think I can.
Baseball, Ben Botten, you guys can really help me out.
What happened?
You should be able to help me out. You're the wise one in the house. Oscar Garner III joins us with the cameo appearance, dressed like he's going clubbing. Well, no, if you went clubbing.
Clubbing in this?
That ain't clubbing clothes, Mike. I don't know when you went to the club last.
I'm definitely wearing a wire if I'm going to clubbing in this.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, everybody knows who you are. There he is. Anyway, so that's what we're going to be doing is supporting high school soccer and the Body Armor. Now let's talk baseball and changes. And we were on a roll about man fraud before a man of integrity, Rick Vaughn, joined us. He's probably got some opinions off the air.
Yeah, definitely. So with man fraud, I mean, it's bigger bases, it's faster time clocks. What else are we looking at this year?
What do you think of bigger? Let's start bigger bases. Let's start there. I
don't see the point.
I think it's going to have a bigger impact on the game than most people are giving it credit. So the bigger
base. From what perspective?
So for stealing bases.
Yeah.
You can also get making it easier. You want to make the game easier?
No, I don't.
These are great world-class athletes.
I think it's a bad idea that they made the bases bigger. There was no reason. They increased the bases from 15 to 18 inches. And so that means that between the bases, first to second, second to third, you're going to have 4.5 inches closer together. So
why don't we get a bigger baseball and those big wiffle bat as well?
Now, I will give...
This is nuts.
I will give a bigger bag at first base, maybe, possibility, especially if it extends into the foul territory. It gives the runner kind of more of a room to avoid a collision between the pitcher and the first baseman and the runner.
But how often did we have collisions at first?
Chipper Jones broke his leg.
Chipper Jones, yeah.
I mean, 20 years ago.
20, 30 years ago, but still. You've got big bodies moving into each other in a close space. That's the only
base. We need to get rid of the goalpost because a wide receiver ran into him in 1978.
What's the problem they were trying to solve? What was the whole point anyway? I don't even...
Player safety. It's a load of baloney. I think it's ridiculous in the first place that they got rid of collisions at the plate. I think you should be able to take out the catcher. I think you should be able to slide through second base.
24-year-old grandpa, you.
Destroyed Rick Fossey's career. Exactly. Okay. A year and a half.
We're talking about viewership. We're talking about getting fans to get in the ballpark to watch the game from home. How do you do that? You have collisions. You have excitement. You get rid of the replay because then you have managers getting out there, getting into fights, getting into ejections. That's what you need.
Armando Galarraga would disagree.
Ruining his career.
If we want to make the game soft, if we want to add these pitch clocks, if we want to make the game safer,
soft.
You know
what the hell?
That's not how you get people to watch the game.
You know what? On the extreme end, though, I hate bench clearing brawls with a passion. I think if you leave the dugout, you leave the bullpen, you should be suspended for a week.
No, get in the fight.
No, I do not. I think they're an embarrassment to baseball. No. I think the Johnny Rosenbaum, Ron Marshall, he grabbed a bat and he tried swinging at him.
Next thing you're going to quit fighting with hockey.
I think it should be like hockey. I think if the batter wants to charge the mound, he gets on the dirt of the mound and they duke it out. First person to hit the ground, they're both out of the game.
Like hockey. I don't think. See,
first person to hit the ground,
they're both out of the game.
See, I don't even. even think they should be ejected. I like watching some of the old clips of players getting little shoving matches, little brawls, and they let both of them stay in because they got it out of their system. Keep playing ball. Let's move on. Next pitch.
I just think the herd of people that come out of the bullpens, and it's like the game kind of, even the brawl kind of stops when they're just like, they're all kind of slow moving into this brawl, and they all just stand around and ask each other where they're going out to eat that night.
Well, and then, you know, if you get hit by a pitch unintentionally, but you've got to hit the guy back the next time or you're not a man. So if you're the guy up there and you don't want to hit him, and your players, your teammates are like, dude,
you should.
Where's it coming hit from? Him.
It's just, it's all ridiculous.
I'm all for it. There's some unwritten rules of baseball.
Well, you hit nine batters in one game.
Yeah, that happened. That happened once.
Yeah.
But I will say there's unwritten rules. If you got a guy that pimps a ball off you, it's policing the game. You know what you do? You give
him that game. No, strike him out. I've had enough. That's soft. The unwritten rules, soft? Like you have to manage my. I gave up a home run. Now I have to manage my emotions and hit the guy next up.
Like, if I throw a fastball and you jack it 500 feet, that's my fault.
Exactly. Yeah, what are you getting at?
There's nothing wrong with him. If he hits the ball over the fence, God bless him. That's on me. But the second you start flipping the bat up in the air like a bozo, I'm going to plunk you next time you come up.
Now, those guys who pimp the bat and stare at him and let him know I got one off of you, that's why I watch
it. And you know what happens? I'm going to give you one, and I'm going to give you one right in the rib cage. I'm coming up and in.
But strike him out the next time.
I made a mistake. Now I'm going to hurt another guy for my mistake. Exactly. All right.
Oh, you showed me up. I'm going to show you up. I'm going to give you some chin music. I'm going to wake you up.
But the way a pitcher can show
you get nine people in one game. You're working with high school kids now? You're scaring me.
But they should know how baseball is supposed to be played.
But the way to embarrass a batter is make him look stupid in the box, not hit him in the
back. Oh, my God, Ben Botham, I love you. You're 24 years old and you act like you're 98. All right, so let's go over some more of these changes that Manfred has presented to baseball.
So we were talking about the 15 and 20 seconds with an automatic ball if they go over. I believe that pitchers should protest this. Each one for opening day should take as much time on that mound. Just sit there and wait and wait and wait, because this is ridiculous having that. And the even bigger thing to go on top of that is pitchers when they step off. If you step off three times without getting the runner out at first base, that's a balk, and they get to move.
Yeah, the pickoff attempt thing is limited at two throws now over to first base.
Three
total.
If the third throw is not to get, does not get the batter out, that's
so. If you're forcing the pitcher's hand like that, don't you think steals are going to be? They're going to be. Everybody's going to try.
Just dance off.
You know,
bigger bases.
You know, at that point that once he's picked over twice, you pretty much have a free base.
Well, go.
I mean, you got like,
why not?
The Ricky Henderson.
You know, Ricky Henderson would have done.
Oh,
he would have stealthed 200.
If you've got a quick.
In a season.
Back to the base, you can get a free base. It's not even about stealing anymore. It's just having that quick response time.
Here's one thing I'll say as an outsider looking in, that's not, you know, as in depth of watching or covering baseball. Okay, so they're trying to speed up the pace of the game. This first year is going to be a nightmare because there's so many things that they rolled out at once. They should have rolled out one a year. This is and they should have piecemealed it. And they're just here's a laundry list, and you guys manage it. It's kind of like what the NCAA did, and all the problems they've created. Well, and they didn't think it through thoroughly. And Manfred should have. They should have said, all right, 2023, we'll do this 4-5. Well, you agree?
As deep in it, but or haven't they been trying this stuff out at the AAA?
You don't just throw it out all at once in one year. You should have staged it, I guess, is the term I'm using.
Because Manfred's out in 2020. Well, his contract comes to an end in 2020.
But as you said, the owners are all now making big bank, and that's primarily because of television bills. Money, and they're going to keep him around. No different than the NFL. They're going to keep him around. Regardless, because they're all making money and they don't want to upset the apple cart.
Well, that really depends on how Bally Sports responds.
Isn't Bally Sports supposed to be
Chapter 11?
Yeah. So that's I think how
that's going to impact hockey right now too.
How he responds to the Bally Sports thing, whether they do streaming in an MLB app or anything, will probably determine if he gets picked back up, because that is a cash cow that they don't want to lose.
Well, MLB Network is already a cluster with trying to watch the games in their app. Trying to watch all that stuff is ridiculous. You have blackouts every day, and now that their main provider of sports down here in the South for television is going to be going bankrupt.
It's a huge problem.
It's unbelievable.
And they saw the handwriting. I've studied it the last 3 days and read four articles. They're kind of like our iHeartRadio. They've only been in Chapter 11 four times now, and they're about to go again. Bally Sports has had financial problems for decades, and here they are.
Well, that whole problem was caused when Disney bought part of Fox's assets, and Disney bought Fox Sports. And because they already owned ESPN, it would have caused a monopoly in the market. So the government said, hey, you can buy Fox's entertainment parts, The Simpsons, you can buy their shows, there's Fox Broadcasting, but you can't buy, and they had no interest in Fox News. So Fox News became its own thing. Fox Television went to Disney, and Fox Sports went to Bally. So Disney kind of tipped over the Fox Empire.
It was a domino effect.
It was a domino effect, too, because Disney already owned ESPN.
And they
owned all of that broadcasting.
They didn't have the deep pockets. And if you watch a lot of their productions, they're not at par of a Fox or an ESPN, in my opinion.
Right.
I mean, that's it.
I 100% agree.
Yeah, 100%. It looks like a regional thing, you know, which, you know, for a regional broadcast, be great. But you're supposed to be, you know, nationwide, worldwide.
Disney wanted no part of the regional sports broadcast.
And they never have.
Yeah, so Bally Sports picked it up. From Fox Sports.
Well, the commissioners, hockey's going to be impacted probably this month in March. Yep. And they got to make a decision because there's a lot of issues there as well. So,
Ben, do you have anything else good on that list? Or
Yeah, we have. So
there's nothing good.
So probably the biggest thing that's going to affect the Rays, I believe, is the shift restrictions, because we're a team that utilizes the shift probably more than any other team in Major League Baseball. And I think there's going to be some growing pains for the Rays. Not saying that we're going to have a tough season, but I do believe that's going to cut into the play that Kevin Cash likes to do. A very analytical
A lot of analytical coaches.
That's coming out. What is it?
So the shift restrictions, the defensive team must have a minimum of four players on the infield with at least two infielders completely on either side of second base.
Ridiculous. It's like telling a defense in the NFL, here's the defense you're going to run on 3rd and 10. Well, you're going to run zone 2, no man-to-man. I mean, this is also ridiculous. Telling them how they manage the game.
Also, you're not allowed to move infielders within the course of the inning. So if your shortstop starts at shortstop for the third inning, he cannot then go play second base within the same inning. He must stay there the entirety of that inning. I don't know.
Again, telling you how to manage your team in the game of baseball. It's ridiculous.
But what you can do is you can pull one of your outfielders and put him in the infield.
I don't care.
Yeah.
He's an outfielder. He shouldn't be playing in the infield. Okay, utility infielder. There goes that term down the drain.
So I still can pull an outfielder down, put him right in between short and third, and he can play that spot. But if I start short at short, he can't leak over to the other side of the bag.
Correct.
Okay.
You can't swap. Like, let's say your shortstop is your best defensive player, and you have a guy that likes to pull the ball. You can't then put him over at second base.
Okay. Okay.
I think it's silly.
This is going to slow the game down when they're examining what teams are doing. They're going to try to mask it, and they'll say, wait a minute, you guys shifted. No, we didn't. We only came over 2 feet. It's going to slow the game down. It is contradictory of trying to speed the game of baseball up. Man fraud blows.
It's ridiculous. I mean, if a guy like
anything else, sir.
Yeah, so position players in their ability to pitch is also going to be removed, because position players may only pitch if a game goes into extra innings, or if you're in the ninth inning and trailing by 8 or more, or in the ninth leading by 10 or more.
So they're again telling you, Brad Phillips, who was infamous for that, and it was always great, your former Seminole buddy. That can't happen anymore?
Correct.
That was always kind of cool, actually.
I love watching.
I felt like they overused it, though. In the last 2 or 3 years, I saw the chart of it, and it had kind of been It's about the same until about 2020. And then position players are almost in every game. Like they were
so,
like every
it's baseball. Game.
I'm not
baseball.
I'm not a purist in any sense of the word when it comes to baseball. I like seeing that, and I kind of hate that you have to be absolutely getting blown out like crazy.
Well, I think the rule was 6 runs before. Now it's 8 to 10 or something.
The rule was with Manfred. He put that in, and before that, there was no rule. You could just come in whenever. Okay. He instituted a lot of rules last year that I think hindered the game as well, where you could only visit the mound a few times. You can only do this.
All right.
And the big thing is, what's the difference between a 3-hour and 25-minute game versus a 3-hour and 30-minute game?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Is that gonna really going to change it?
All right, we've been nothing but negative the last 10 minutes. Let's be positive. Across the parking lot is Rays Fan Fest. 18,000 strong, 20,000 fans everywhere. 18,000, 20,000 people are going to be in the Trop having a great day. It's an event, as Rick Vaughn said, that he was a part of for 20 years. He enjoyed it thoroughly, and it was always a hit, a success. It's great to see the guys coming back and signing autographs, and there's hope for every franchise in America when they have Fan Fest and it's a positive day in baseball. And we need it after the football season we had.
Sure, and we have plenty to be hopeful for, at least in the pitching department. You got to look at our starting rotation. It's unbelievable.
Well, you can continue. We got 4 minutes sometimes.
It's Shane McClanahan. You got Tyler Glasnow, Zach Eflin, Jeffrey Springs, and, of course, my favorite, Drew Rasmussen. I think he's going to be the standout this year.
And is Patino still – Is he on the disabled list? Or?
That I'm not sure. I haven't looked at injuries yet. I know spring training starting up.
And Glasnow, I don't think – is he going to be starting –
I would think Glasnow.
Like a serious pitch count?
No, Glasnow is good to go. I heard that today. They had a live broadcast early this morning over there, and they talked to the play-by-play guys who do a superb job. And
I know they still got arms in AAA that they can bring up, but no, Rasmussen and Spring, those big, are surprises from last year.
The big factor this year is keeping people healthy, and I hope that training staff figured something out.
The all-star training staff.
Precisely. Of course, you have to put that
in. He won that. He did win the all-star
training. I know. We talked about my friend Jeff Mangold from the Yankees. But the bottom line is this. We have got to keep Wander Franco healthy for butts in the seats and for having that kind of talent on the squad this year.
Yeah, 100%. 100% agree.
And we lost our man, KK. The emotional leader.
Thank the Lord.
The emotional the Lord. Leader. You,
he's gone.
You goodbye. Negative 98-year-old, 24-year-old.
G-Man's gone, too. I'm wearing my G-Man shirt as tribute.
I am sad about G-Man. Yeah. I like
G-Man. G-Man Choi.
G-Man.
And in fact, he ended up at the Pirates.
Yes.
Yes, he did.
Baseball purgatory.
I was going to say, that's where they go. That's where their careers go to.
Beautiful stadium.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Who cares if your career's going in the tank? All right. Well, now I got to add Oscar Garner III to our conversation. Thanks for making the cameo appearance.
Give the outside perspective. I don't want to rag on your sport like you rag on mine, but
yeah. And oh my God, we're running out of time where we could talk NBA All-Star game.
Oh, what a,
do you have a Daytona 500 pick? Who's going to win it all?
Number 23.
shout out to belated birthday to Michael Jordan, his 60th birthday yesterday, who just gave $10 million to the Children's Miracle Fund. Bravo. He is the greatest of all time.
Go.
Yes, he is.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Better than that guy, LeBron.
Okay. Wow. All right. Look, we're not going to go. Stop. We're not going to end the show negative. So you're going over and have a great time.
I am.
You're going to go sell some books.
I'm going to be outside of Ferg's. Come on out and see me.
And you're going to go chase your dream.
And go get something to eat.
There you go. And I'm going to stay here, and we're going to do a little soccer event here at 4 o'clock. It's the Champions League draw right here at Ferg's. I'll have Jim Hart down here, Neil Collins, the Rowdies head coach, Perry Vandenberg, USL, first player drafted out of high school, by the way, and Lucky Mikkelsen, the Rowdies 12th man. So for Toby Hall, Michelle Ray Hall, Rick Vaughn, Michael Lortz, Ben Botham, Oscar Garner III, Joe Boudreau, Big Ed and Matt on the controls. I'm Mike Rickard with Ben Botham. Thanks for listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection and wishing you and your families a fabulous weekend. God bless you. God bless America. And as always, be sure to have a championship week.